Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you again live with Community Conversations with my main man, Brother George. Stick with us. You might learn something today. Hold on tight. Start. There it is, folks. It's the Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you, brought to you by the NAAEA, which focuses on politics, economics, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. We're doing it all, people, because we got to help ourselves, help each other to get out of this condition that we're in. As a part of that, what we do is we want to be able to educate our people through information and conversation. If you just sit back and listen, share this with your relatives and friends, because Brother George does a great job of explaining our history to us. The more we know about ourselves, the more we'll do better. So let me bring the brother in now. Brother George, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you, brother. I appreciate it, and always appreciate the invitation.
All right. Well, let's get started with our Willie Lynch moment and the impact of Willie Lynch. What you got for us today?
Well, I'm going to be speaking out of another book. As I said, I like to share titles and different books that relate to our experience with the Willie Lynch curse. And the name of this book is Breaking the Curse of Willie Lynch, and it's by Alvin Morrow. Today, the plantation represents the artificial conflict of interest between black men and women. What needs to be done in the relationship of black men and women is that we need to develop and define a cultural agenda. An agenda systematically structured to overrun any of our personal desires that serve and benefit the opposition, thereby dissolving those goals that breed envy, instigate division, and the spiritual lynching of black families. We have, through four decades of conditioning, been made to believe and practice a foreign people's dictated lifestyle. This Eurocentric practice of individual independence of men and women makes it look like blacks are directly the source cause of the destruction of their own family structure. Now, the brothers alluding to the fact that we need to get back to our own culture. We need to get back to the systems that we were living by. We need to get back to the 42 laws of Maat. We need, and those are very good, very structured laws that we need to take heed to. And you need to do, you know, a little research and look them up and begin to read them and see how relevant they are to black lives. So that's my Willie Lynch segment.
There it is, folks. Listen and learn. It is Breaking the Curse of Willie Lynch by Alvin Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W. Pick up the book, read it, and begin to challenge yourself to break the curse or the system that has been put in place to keep us from each other. All right, brother, let's go with the significance of the SNCC, S-N-C-C, and CORE versus the SCLC and the NAACP. Give it to us, brother.
Well, I wanted to start with these two organizations primarily because they were created by young people, college students. And the NAACP, which is the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the SCLC was the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Those two organizations are those that are most noted about the civil rights movement. Now, some people heard a SNCC and some people may have heard a CORE, but I'm going to give a full definition of who they are. The Congress for Racial Equality, that's CORE, was formed in 1942 as an interracial organization committing to achieving integration through nonviolent direct action and civil disobedience. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, that's SNCC, formed in 1960, focused on mobilizing local communities in nonviolent protests to expose injustice and demand federal action. Now, as I go along, I'm going to define to you why I said what I said about SNCC and the fact that SNCC, you know, was set up by young people and CORE was set up by young people. Now, I think I spoke about Ella Baker earlier on. It might have been during the Harlem Renaissance that I spoke about the fact that there were Harlem Renaissance people that also were significant in the civil rights movement. I think Ella was one of them, but in April, Ella Baker, the executive secretary of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Now, she was in SCLC, and students from the sit-ins met on the campus of Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina, and founded SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, as its name suggests, endeavored to coordinate efforts among students, both black and white, in direct action, nonviolent efforts in the movement for civil rights. SNCC conducted lunch counter sit-ins and contributed participants to the 1961 Freedom Riders. Now, what I would like to get at here is that SNCC were like the boots on the ground. And so they were the ones that were right in the middle, you know, of the fight, because they were young people. And so the young people are the ones that's going to do the most protesting and they're going to do the most daring things. But the interesting thing about SNCC and CORE was that many of their members, as I go along in this presentation, excuse me, many of their members, they changed their strategies. They went away from the nonviolent resistance strategies and they moved into a more defense mode, a more conflictive mode. If you put your hands on me, then I'm going to put my hands back on you type of ideology. Because one of the things that they realized was that civil disobedience can work. But at the same time, when you are willing to take a blow, when you're willing to allow someone to injure you without response, because that's what nonviolent resistance is, then when you have people that's glad to do that to you, some people are not willing to keep on tolerating that. And so that's what happened.
All right, we're mobilizing and organizing our people as we come through this movement. This is a great time to plan, prepare, and strategize. So get out into your communities, organize, participate, and become a difference maker in your community. You're listening to NAA Community Conversations with Brother George, looking at what slavery did to us, part 10 in our series on that. And we're talking about nationalists, black nationalists, and pan-Africanists, also our revolutionary movement. So let's move on to talk about my hero. Who was Malcolm X? And what did he have, or what impact did he have on the black nationalist and revolutionary movement?
Well, I chose Malcolm X first. You know, sometimes you say you save the most impactful for last, but I think that it's relevant in this case to talk about the most impactful in the beginning, and you'll see why as I go along. Malcolm X was an African-American leader in the civil rights movement, minister and supporter of black nationalism. He urged his fellow black Americans to protect themselves against white aggression by any means necessary, and a stance that often put him at odds with the nonviolent teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His charisma and oratory skills helped him achieve national prominence in the Nation of Islam, a belief system that merged Islam with black nationalism. After Malcolm X's assassination in 1965, his best-selling book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, popularized his ideas and inspired the Black Power movement. That's why I put Malcolm X first, was because the things and the ideology that Malcolm stood for. Malcolm was the national representative for the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. And so he was a black nationalist first, and he inspired a lot of the young people of that time, because you got to remember that Malcolm didn't just start preaching in the 60s. He started preaching in the 50s. So a lot of these young people, while they were growing up, they were listening to the teachings of Malcolm X. They were listening to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad through Malcolm X. And then Malcolm, you know, you always put your own spin on whatever it is that you learn. And Malcolm was a great inspiration to the nationalist, revolutionary, and Pan-Africanist movement.
NAAEA, Political, Economic, Athletics, Cultural, and Educational Empowerment by Any Means Necessary. Let's move this thing along, brother. Let's go to the people's champ, Muhammad Ali.
Well, I like to always talk about Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was a boxer, philanthropist, and social activist who is universally regarded as one of the greatest athletes of the 20th century. Ali became an Olympic gold medalist in 1960 and the world heavyweight champion in 1964. Following his suspension from refusing military service, Ali reclaimed the heavyweight title two more times in 1970, winning the famed bout against Joe Frazier and George Foreman. Along the way, diagnosed with Parkinson's in 1984, Ali devoted much of his time to philanthropy, earning the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005. Now, Muhammad Ali was also a member of the Nation of Islam, and the name that he received, Muhammad Ali, was given to him by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And the name, the reason why he called him Muhammad Ali was Muhammad means the people, and Ali means champ. And so that's why we always classify and call Ali the people's champ. He was also known, you know, for his political views while he was a boxer. He stood up for the people, and Muhammad Ali did a great deal for black people during his time.
Simply the greatest. Simply the greatest. You're listening to NAAEA Community Conversations with Brother George. Join us every Saturday at 2 p.m. for an Empowerment Saturday show. Hey, it's a conversation simply for our people, by our people, with our people. You don't want to miss it. Great conversation. All right, Brother George, let's move on to the Morris Science Temple of America.
Now, the Morris Science Temple I should have had in the 1920s and 1930s during the Harlem Renaissance period with Marcus Garvey's movement and the Nation of Islam. The Morris Science Temple was probably the first black organization that was established after the emancipation time period. And the Morris Science Temple, religious movement founded in Newark, New Jersey in 1913 by Timothy Drew, known to the followers as Noble Drew Ali, and also as the Prophet Noble Drew Ali. Drew Ali taught that all blacks were of Moorish origin, but had their Muslim identity taken away from them through slavery and racial segregation. He advocated that they should return to the Islam of their Moorish forefathers, redeeming themselves from racial oppression by reclaiming their historical spiritual heritage. He also encouraged using the name Moor rather than black in self-identification. Now, the funny thing about the Moor Science Temple is that when I was growing up in Philadelphia, I really was first approached by brothers that were in the Moor Science Temple. So the Moor Science Temple was more prominent, I believe, in the black community than a lot of our people know. They just weren't as outwardly challenging people like the Nation and Marcus Garvey's movement and the NAACP. They were more like just educating the people and trying to get us to understand that we had a historical civil status that was taken away from us when we were enslaved. And that connects us back to what I spoke about in the very beginning with the Moors in Spain, because that's exactly what Prophet Noble Drew Ali was talking about. And I affectionately will call him the Prophet because that's what his followers call him, is Prophet Noble Drew Ali. And so I wanted to bring him in because I also thought that it was that he was more significant. They were more significant during the civil rights era than sometimes people give credit. But I should have actually put him in with Marcus Garvey, because he and Marcus Garvey were very good friends, you know. So, he's in there now, and, you know, that's the Moor Science Temple.
There it is, my people. Great organizations. Look up to you, Moor Science Temple, and the work of Noble Drew Ali. Study, learn, and show yourselves approved. We got to get this thing right, people. All right, let's move on to Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, the most versatile brother of the civil rights era.
Now, I had to call Stokely Carmichael the most versatile brother of the civil rights era for a reason. Stokely Carmichael was a U.S. civil rights activist who in the 1960s originated the Black Nationalist rally slogan, Black Power. Born in Trinidad, he immigrated to New York City in 1952. While attending Howard University, he joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and was jailed for his work with the Freedom Riders. He moved away from Martin Luther King Jr.'s nonviolent approach to self-defense. Now, that's one move that he made right there. He moved from being nonviolent resistance to a protective-like approach. In 1966, Stokely Carmichael was elected to head the SCLC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Carmichael embraced the Black Power movement, which included black separatism and the use of violence in self-defense, meaning that if you got to hurt somebody to defend yourself, then I'm going to just have to do that. In 1966, Carmichael declared at a rally that in that year, the concept of Black Power. The year when black men realized their full worth in society, their dignity, their beauty, and their power. The greatest power on the earth, the power of the right. With its commitment to nonviolence drop, Carmichael renamed the organization the Student National Coordinating Committee, meaning that he changed the name from nonviolent to National Coordinating Committee. In 1967, H-Rat Brown, which was another bad brother, took over as SNSN, the Student National Coordinating Committee chairman, and moved the organization further towards black separatism. Now, when you look at Stokely Carmichael, I mean, this brother is amazing. A stellar student, Carmichael received scholarship offers to a variety of prestigious, predominantly white universities after graduating from high school in 1960. He chose instead to attend the historically black Howard University in Washington, D.C. There, he majored in philosophy, studying the works of Camus, Sartre, and Santayana, and considering ways to apply their theoretical frameworks to issues facing the civil rights movement. In other words, these philosophers that he was studying, he was trying to figure out if there were some methods that they had used that he could take and help out with the civil rights movement. Carmichael managed to raise the number of registered voters when he went to Alabama. He was able to raise the number of voters, of registered black voters, from 70 to 2,600, 300 more than the number of registered white voters in the county, which means that ultimately they won that election because of him getting, you know, voters to participate. Unsatisfied with the response of either of the two major parties to his registration efforts, meaning the Republicans and Democrats, Carmichael founded his own party, the Louse County Freedom Organization, to satisfy a requirement that all political parties had to have an official logo. He chose a Black Panther, which later provided the inspiration for the Black Panther Party out in Oakland, California. Now, what's interesting is that Stokely Carmichael didn't start the Black Panthers, but that Loud County party that he started was the forerunner to the Black Panther Party. In 1967, now he's moved from self-defense to being on the aggressive revolutionary now, okay? So in 1967, Carmichael took a transformative journey, traveling outside the United States to visit revolutionary leaders in Cuba, North Vietnam, China, and Ghana. Upon his return to the United States, he left the SCLC. He left SNCC and became prime minister of the more radical Black Panthers. I think I jumped the gun when I said he jumped to the Panthers, but he eventually jumped to the Panthers. So now he's went from nonviolent resistance to taking blows now to now being on the aggressive, being a revolutionary with the Black Panthers. He spent the next 2 years speaking around the country and writing essays on black nationalism, black separatism, and increasing Pan-Africanism, which ultimately became Carmichael's life's cause. In 1969, Carmichael quit the Panthers and left the United States to take up permanent residence in Ghana, where he dedicated his life to the cause of Pan-African unity. America does not belong to the blacks, he said, explaining his departure from the country. Carmichael changed his name to Kwame Ture in honor of two presidents of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah and Sekou Touré. Now, those two names are what made up Kwame Ture.
Wow, he's the man. Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, Black Power. Go out, become an investor in your community by simply becoming active. Do something to make your community better, but start with yourself. Let's move on. Let's talk about the cultural nationalist Mulana Kuringa.
Now, Mulana Kuringa was his greatest impact. You know, Stokely, Malcolm X, you know, was the initiative behind the Black Power movement. You know, his speeches early on. Stokely Carmichael was the versatility. He had the ability to transform from one organization to the other because he didn't feel like they were meeting the people's needs. Now, Mulana Kuringa he and his following had a great deal to do with the new Black culture that was established in this country. He did a great deal of writing. He wrote books. He did a great deal of research in Africa to try to connect up any type of cultural thing that we did with something in Africa that was relative to something in Africa. Now, Mulana Kuringa was an influential Black activist and scholar during the Black Power movement. He identified as a cultural nationalist. Mulana Kuringa is known for his many contributions to the Black Power movement, and most famously, the founding of the U.S. organization and the creation of the holiday Kwanzaa. Now, his organization was called the US Organization, and the US Organization stood for United Slaves. That was the name of his organization, was the United Slaves. By 1969, the US Organization and the Black Panthers had grown to become certain about their respective standings as leading Black Power organizations. US sought to lead a cultural revolution transforming Black consciousness, great group identity, purpose, and direction, which would lay the foundation for a collective African-American political decision. The Black Panther Party defined itself as the vanguard party in the national liberation struggle to free the Black colony and simultaneously to unite with other progressive forces to combat racism, capitalism, and imperialism. Actually, the broad objectives of both organizations were complementary. The Black Panther Party's goal of bringing about United Nations supervised plebiscite to be held throughout the Black colony for the purpose of defining the will of Black people as to their national destiny. Now, the Panthers and the US organization, they had some scuffles between them, you know, because, you know, for whatever reason, I guess it's like a lot of other Black organizations, but ultimately, as I just stated, they really were complementary to each other. And, you know, I'm going to go further with some of the things that Mulana Kuringa put into effect. The US organization followed rules outlined in a book written by Mulana Kuringa, where members were told to think Black, talk Black, act Black, create Black, buy Black, vote Black, and live Black. Man, I love that. I love that. That just sounds so exhilarating, you know, for us to do something like that. Now, Mulana Kuringa's birth name was Ron Everett. And he chose he chose the name from his name now from Kiswahili. Malana means master teacher, and Karanga means keeper of the tradition. And I think that that's a highly regarded thing that, you know, that he would take a name like that. And if you research and read his books and the different papers that he's written, he's earned that title as master teacher. You know, why he didn't get along very well with the Black Panthers, I'm not sure. But in a minute, I guess we'll find out.
Well, I would like to give credit to the Willie Lynch for the division, if we may add that in. But let's go back to that piece. Live Black, what was it again? Brother George, while we have that piece in place, run that by me one more time. We need to hear this.
Malana Karanga wrote some rules for the US organization, the United Slaves Organization. And he told them in that book, think black, talk black, act black, create black, buy black, vote black, and live black. Man, that's just amazing.
Need I say more? It's the NAAEA Community Conversations with Brother George, Part 10 of What Slavery Did to Us. This is the Civil Rights Era, and we're talking about our movements during that period of time. And so we're going to move now to the Black Revolutionaries, Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton.
Well, I'm going to talk about Bobby Seale first. Bobby Seale is an African-American political activist and co-founder and national chairman of the Black Panther Party. Who is Bobby Seale? Bobby Seale is one of a generation of young African-American radicals who broke away from the usual nonviolent civil rights movement to preach a doctrine of militant black empowerment, helping found the Black Panthers, later renamed the Black Panther Party in 1966. In 1970, as the Black Panthers faded from public view, Seale took a quieter role working towards improving social services in black neighborhoods and other causes. Now, Bobby Seale, you know, was one of the founders of the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party did a lot of great things in the black community. They didn't just walk around with rifles, you know, because you have to understand that during that time period, all of these brothers were very educated and just about all of them were college students. And so if you look up their profile today, you'll find that many of them became doctors, lawyers. When I say doctors, I mean they have a doctoral degree in something. And they were very well educated. And so when they put together their programs with other members of the party, they had programs like programs to give physicals to poor black children. Because many of our children, they couldn't get a physical because their parents didn't have health insurance to just take them to the doctors and get a physical. So many of the Panthers that were in the medical profession or in the medical field in college, they were giving the kids physicals. And then another thing that they started was they started the free lunch program. Now, to my knowledge, I remember that there were soup lines, but as far as a free lunch program, the first that I heard of was the Panthers, and that back in the 60s. And so they were the ones that were giving children free lunch and free breakfast so that before they go to school, they wouldn't, you know, be hungry while they were in school and they could perform better in school. And so they didn't just talk about the things that the community needed. They practiced what they preached. So the little resources that they had, they use to help the community. Now I'm going to move on to Huey Newton. Now, Huey Newton is, from my time back then, Huey Newton was more known than Bobby Seale during that time period. Huey P. Newton was an African-American activist best known for co-founding the militant Black Panther Party with Bobby Seale in 1966. In 1966, Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale founded the left-wing Black Panther Party for self-defense in Oakland, California. The organization was central to the Black Panther movement, making headlines with its controversial rhetoric and militaristic style. Newton faced a number of criminal charges over the years and at one point fled to Cuba before returning to the United States and earning his doctoral degree. Struggling with drugs and alcohol addiction in his later years, he was killed in 1989 in Oakland. Now, I don't know exactly how how Huey Newton was killed, you know, but it seems like he got wrapped up in drugs and alcohol, which you have to understand that when you go to that time period that they say he was killed, that was during the crack epidemic. And many of our great leaders fell into that trap. And, you know, and the crack epidemic really hurt our communities. Now, this is something amazing about Huey Newton, that many of us have to really hear what it is that I'm saying with this. Despite having multiple suspensions and run-ins with the law as a teen, Newton began to take his education seriously, finding inspiration when his older brother Melvin earned a master's in social work. Although Newton graduated from high school in 1959, he was considered barely literate, meaning that he couldn't hardly read. He nonetheless became his own teacher, learning to read by himself. He taught his own self how to read. And ultimately, he became a doctor. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Huey P. Newton and what the Black Panther Party established. The group set forth its political goals in a document entitled the 10-Point Program, which called for the better housing, jobs, and education for African Americans. It also called for an end to economic exploitation of Black communities, along with military exemption. The organization itself was not afraid to punctuate its message with dramatic appearances. For example, to protest a gun bill in 1967, members of the Panthers entered the California legislature armed. Newton actually wasn't present at the demonstration. The action was a shocking one that made news across the country. Yeah, I remember that. And Newton emerged as a leading figure in the Black militant movement.
Wow, the power of the Black mind. It's the NAAEA Community Conversations with my main man, Brother George, giving it to y'all just the way it needs to be given. Sit back and listen and learn. Maybe you can impact your community like these leaders that we have now. Let's slide on over to the Black Pantherette, Angela Davis.
Now, many of you know of Angela Davis, you know, but during that time, you know, that queen, she was a bad sister. Educator and activist Angela Davis became known for her involvement in a politically charged murder case in the early 1970s. Influenced by her segregated upbringing in Birmingham, Alabama, Davis joined the Black Panthers and an all-black branch of the Communist Party as a young woman. She became a professor at UCLA, but fell out of favor with the administration due to her ties. Davis was charged with aiding the botched escape attempt of imprisoned black radical George Jackson and served roughly 18 months in jail before her acquittal in 1972. After spending time traveling and lecturing, Davis returned to the classroom as a professor and authored several books. Now, I'm going to address the issue with the Soledad brothers, which is what they were saying that she was charged with aiding, you know, the escape attempt of George Jackson. Outside of academia, Angela Davis had become a strong supporter of three prison inmates of Soledad Prison, known as the Soledad Brothers, but they were not related. These three were named John Clutchett, Fleeta Drumgo, and George Lester Jackson, was accused of killing a prison guard after several African-American inmates had been killed in a fight by another guard. So they had a, you know, a prison riot, and the guard got into a fight with some of the prisoners and killed them. Some thought these prisoners were being used as scapegoats because of the political work within the prison. During Jackson's trial in August of 1970, an escape attempt was made when Jackson's brother Jonathan entered the courtroom to claim hostages he could exchange for his brother. Jonathan Jackson, Supreme Court Judge Harold Haley, and two inmates were killed in the ensuing shootout. So they got into the court, and his brother said, "We're going to hold court right here." And they just started firing and killed a bunch of people up in the court. Angela Davis was brought up on several charges for her alleged part in the event, including murder. She went into hiding and was one of the FBI's most wanted before being caught 2 months later. There were two main pieces of evidence used at her trial. The guns used were registered to her, and she was reportedly in love with George Jackson. Her case drew the attention of the international press, and after spending roughly 18 months in jail, Davis was acquitted in 1972. So now, apparently, they were able to prove that she really, you know, even though George Jackson's brother possessed her gun, that she didn't give it to him. He apparently found the gun around her house and then used it in that Boston temple, either since he was already dead. George Jackson told her to, you know, just say that you didn't give him the gun or whatever. But at any rate, they couldn't prove their facts, and so they had to acquit her. But once again, she works in the collegiate system. She goes around the country lecturing to this day on different things, and one of those things is, I think that she eventually became full-fledged, you know, into the communist scene. And, you know, because she eventually became more of a communist than she did a Panther. And so I think that's what the path that she's on right now. But she's still, you know, an outstanding sister that did a great deal for our people during that time period.
Both brilliant and incredible. What a story. What a woman. She is still on the circuit today. She came to Richmond maybe a year and a half ago now and tore it up. Angela Davis, one of our greats. Let's move on over now to a brilliant young warrior, General Fred Hampton.
Now, Fred Hampton, I'm not sure that too many people actually know about Fred Hampton, but when during the time period that Huey Newton and Bobby Seale and some of there were other prominent Panther leadership, they started, just like you said, fading, and they started really they weren't as effective to the community. And then in comes Fred Hampton. Now, the astonishing thing about Fred Hampton was Fred Hampton was no more than about 19 or 20 years old when he was essentially like the head of the Black Panther Party. And he was definitely the head in his city in Chicago. But I'm gonna say a little bit about Fred Hampton. Fred Allen Hampton, born August 30th, 1948, and died December 4th of 1969, was an American activist and revolutionary socialist. He came to prominence in Chicago as chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party and deputy chairman of the National Black Panther Party. In this capacity, he founded the Rainbow Coalition. When you think of the Rainbow Coalition, you think of Jesse Jackson, but actually, Fred Hampton coined that phrase, and he put together the first real rainbow within our community, and he coined that name, and Jesse Jackson just took it and used it with the Rainbow Push Coalition, okay? A prominent multicultural political organization that initially included the Black Panthers, the Young Patriots, and the Young Lords, and an alliance among major Chicago street gangs to help them end infighting and work for social change. Now, the interesting thing about what I just said is you got to understand who those people were that he was putting together. Hampton and his friends, associates, made a number of significant achievements in Chicago. Perhaps his most important was his brokering of a non-aggression pact among Chicago's most powerful street gangs, emphasizing that racial and ethnic conflict among gangs would only keep its members entrenched in poverty. Hampton strove to forge the class consciousness, multiracial alliance among the Black Panther Party, the Neo-Confederate Young Patriots, mean white guys, organization, and the Young Lords, under the leadership of Jose Cha-Cha Jimenez, which means that was a Puerto Rican gang, or that was a Hispanic, Latinx gang. And leading to, that was the Rainbow Coalition. So he took street gangs, something that we can't seem to do during our time period. He got them to make peace with each other for the sake of the community. The overall community, not just the Black community, but he was saying, like, all of us around here is in poverty. So y'all white cats that's in poverty, you in poverty too. Y'all Hispanic cats that's in poverty, y'all in poverty too. All of us are in poverty. We need to come together so that we could try to resolve this issue. Now, that's genius for a young man. And the interesting thing about Fred Hampton was that the government feared him so much that they committed the most cowardly act that you could commit against a human being. They killed him in his sleep. They had to sneak into his apartment and kill him while he was asleep. That's the most cowardly act that you could commit to a human being. Even the lion will wake up his prey before they attack. So that was a cowardly act. But Fred Hampton, that was one of the great young men of our time period. And you need to understand that.
Wow. Just imagine if Chairman Fred had survived. With his organizing skills, his communication skills, imagine what Chicago would be like. Right now, we need people like Chairman Fred. Do your research, study, go home, do your homework. We need change in our community. We need Freds. So become a Fred, become an Angela, become a Malcolm, and much, much more. Let's move on now to the mother of a genius. Afeni Shakur was a genius herself.
Now, I saved Afeni Shakur for last because many of you know her son. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about Tupac's mother. On April 2nd of 1969, 21 members of the Harlem chapter of the Black Panther Party were formally indicted and charged with 156 counts of conspiracy to blow up subway, the police station, five local department stores, six railroads, and the Bronx-based New York Botanical Garden. The absurd and excessive nature of such charges was clearly intended as a federal effort to pitch chapters and regions against each other in the Panther Party. And by doing that, they figured that they could totally paralyze the Panther Party's leadership. What these charges represented was a form of unprecedented legal repression, created as a structural alternative to break the party's stronghold, reputation, and community base. Now, this is what happened. Out of all of the members, each member of the 21 held $100,000 bail. They were held on $100,000 bail, totaling over $2.1 million. It was not until January of 1970 that the first Panther was able to post bail. This was the 22-year-old Alice Faye Williams, better known as Afeni Shakur. In a grueling and tenuous trial, Afeni Shakur, facing 300 years of prison time, daringly chose to be her own attorney in court, partly because financial resources were already razor thin. Afeni, however, meticulously conducted her own legal research, her own interviews, as well as in-court cross-examinations, fully realizing that she would be the one serving, not the lawyers. She was the only Panther who served as her own counsel. Here was a small frame, impoverished Black woman from the backwoods of Lumberton, North Carolina, staring down a full team of New York State prosecutors and outwitting a full cast of established owned media outlets. Here was a single mother with no formal degree going legal toe-to-toe with COINTELPRO. That was an operation that they put into the Black community to shut down all of our Black movement organizations. Through the case of the Panther 21 was the longest trial in New York State history, On her own guts and wit, Afeni Shakur successfully secured her freedom, no money, no attorney, no privilege, pregnant with her second child, Tupac Amour Shakur, Amaru Shakur. What Afeni was able to do in that courtroom was nothing short of miraculous, magical, and mind-blowing. So as I said, yeah, we know Tupac was a genius, but his mother was a genius too. And so that's the end of that. And thank y'all for listening.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. It is part 10 of what slavery did to us, the civil rights era, talking about nationalists, black nationalists, pan-Africanists, and the revolutionary movement. So I want to ask you a quick question. This is a compilation of leadership, courage, and organization. Can you briefly talk about COINTELPRO? Because I was thinking, with all this brilliance, what happened, right? And so you close it out with what happened. But if you could briefly tell our listeners about what that mission was all about, and we'll close out.
Well, COINTELPRO was like an operation that was put together by the FBI. And what it was it was designed to infiltrate our black organizations. And one of the things that COINTELPRO did was they infiltrated the nation, and they were instrumental in Malcolm being killed. And so what that would do is that would lead people to believe, you know, that, well, the nation killed Malcolm. Well, it wasn't any order by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to have Malcolm killed. But you could always influence people's thinking by continuously saying things that can upset a person's temperament and maybe make them do something that with a little more thought they may not have done. But COINTELPRO was there to even infiltrate operations like Jesse Jackson's Operation Push. You see, I mean, they definitely decimated the Black Panther Party. You could see that. And the Black Panther Party came back, and you have the new Black Panther Party today. But because at that time, we basically were so anxious and so happy that we were doing something as a black people, that we were allowing any black to come in. And a few of those blacks were moles. You know, they were moles for COINTELPRO. And so that's one of the ways that, interesting that you asked that Afeni Shakur was able to win her case, because when you're under oath, a mole has to identify, you know, who they were actually working for. And so because of the fact that they identified who they were working for, then that meant that they were doing stuff to set her up. And so you can't set a person up to break the law. That's illegal. And so that was one of her, really one of her strongest defenses, was that there were quite a few moles, and she was able to identify them. But the COINTELPRO was an operation to, you know, to bust up the black organizations, to keep us from making progress.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been NAAEA Community Conversations, part 10 with our brother and friend, Brother George. Lots and lots of information for us. We're going to get out of here now, but before we leave, I want to go back to that Milana Karenga quote and end with that. So I want you guys to listen to this before we get off of this segment here. And while we're closing this piece out, I want you to think about all that you've heard today. I want you to think about how important it is to organize in your community. I want you to think about the impact of each of these individuals and how you can become an effective member of your community and society by doing a few things. That is your mindset, how you think, right? How you feel and who you are.
The US organization followed rules written by Milana Karenga, where he told them, think black, talk black, act black, create black, buy black, vote black, and live black.
Very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me.